This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by Go Engineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit theuavdigest.com/goengineer. And by UAV Propulsion Tech, a provider of propulsion, servo, autopilots, and rescue and recovery parachute solutions for the unmanned aerial vehicle market. For more information, check out www.uavpropulsiontech.com. This is episode 135 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Hey, Max, how are we?
Good. We're back to using the recording technology we know and love this episode. I'm kind of happy to be doing that.
We have to sort of apologize. I'm not really sure what blew up when we used Blab, but we're going to rethink that as a strategy. I don't know if we should give it a third try because the first time was really successful and last time was really bad. So we'll have to rethink that through. But we're back to using good old-fashioned Skype that we've been doing forever. But I guess we should get started. We've got a fairly dense show. Tonight we're going to be talking about the AIR Act and it's going back from which it came. Airbus and Singapore's CAS agreed to package delivery experiments. The first quad to cross the English Channel. Drones to film animals for a new television series. Anti-drone systems for airports. And LTE testing by AT&T and a video of the week. Well, last week, if you could suffer through all the recording things, you heard that I said I don't think AIR was going to go very far, and that was Thursday night, and by Friday morning, it looked like it wasn't coming out of committee. Nailed that one, Max.
Yes, yes. Well, it came out of the House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee back on February 11th, and it was scheduled to move to the floor of the House, but that's been delayed. Now, you'll recall this AIR Act contains kind of two main things that we talk about a lot. The first is the SUAS items that we talked about back in episode 132, and also the micro UAS amendment that we talked about in episode 134, last episode. But the bill also contains some other ideas, David, that have a lot of people very upset.
Yeah, the big one, though, is privatization of the FAA air traffic control system, which we won't go into great detail here, but it's a big issue that the airlines would like privatization of the air traffic control system to be implemented. Unfortunately, that will involve things like user fees and other issues that affect general aviation and business aviation, not so much the airlines. So there was a tremendous pushback on that angle on this bill, which I think is the real reason why it went back to committee. It's kind of a happy benefit for us on the drone side of it that we get a chance to maybe get some things put into it or taken out of it now that it's going back to committee that we wouldn't have had if this whole ATC issue hadn't come up.
Of course, we don't know what the committee will do to the bill. There are obviously a lot of organizations that are pressuring or pushing for one agenda or another. And we know what's in there now concerning the UAS, but you know that might change, and it may be more to our liking, or it may be less. There is that risk, so we'll have to watch this carefully, and we really don't know how long that'll take. But probably, though, they won't have this out in time to meet the deadline of March 31st when the current FAA authorization expires.
At which It's not surprising, and we've lived under extensions forever. I hope the micro UAV amendment gets incorporated into the bill. I mean, that would be the big opportunity. So we'll see. March 31st will come and go, and we might actually have it out of committee by then again. Maybe not. It's tough here in the United States. It's election year politics, and nothing goes smoothly in an election year. So. Mm.
Or a non-election year lately, I think. But yeah, no, good point. We'll see what happens, and we'll certainly keep all of you informed.
And I am trying to reach out to my state representative, Mr. Schuster, see if we can get him on tape or get a message from him. So I'll keep trying that. Since I'm a Pennsylvania constituent, I have a snowball chance in hell of that happening. But
which is more than I have, right?
Well, yeah, it's... Yeah, because you're not a Pennsylvania constituent. So, but let's talk about some other really interesting things. Drone delivery won't go away, will it, Max? Deliver us by package for our drones, I guess, is going to be a new thing. But Airbus Helicopters and the CAA of Singapore signed a Memorandum of Understanding, an MOU, and for UAS experimentation.
That's right. This is part of the Skyways experimentation project. And the two groups, Airbus and CAAS, they're going to conduct package delivery proof of concept trials in Singapore. And they're looking to do this in two phases. The first phase takes place on the campus of the National University of Singapore. And the idea is that Airbus will create a network on the campus of parcel stations, and that goods, packages, whatever items could be delivered by UAV around the campus. And then also suppliers in Singapore could deliver goods to the campus of the National University of Singapore, and then they would be subsequently delivered to the final destination. So that's the first phase of the test.
Phase two would prove out package delivery from a station on the Singapore coast to ships anchored in the bay. That's really kind of interesting about unloading the packages before they even get to the harbor. You know, I mean, that's ships do not like being in port. They don't make any money in port. They make money moving materials. So we're back to the good old days of if we go back in time with launching aircraft off of ships so the mail would get there ahead of the ship. So this is, I mean, BOAC back in the day did that with launched aircraft from ships so the mail would get to the town before the ship did a day or so ahead of time. So this is the same logic. So what's old is new again, and that's coming from the historian.
Another interesting aspect of this is just who the players are. And, you know, it's Airbus and it's, well, essentially the Singapore government. So we have a company and a country, essentially, a nation state, working together to do this. This is kind of an ideal environment for package delivery, I think. For those who've been to Singapore, you know exactly what I'm talking about. You know, small. Most of it is, you know, very developed and urban, high density, relatively small distances because the place isn't all that big, at least by the standards of, you know, most countries. But it therefore represents kind of a really good environment, I think, for the concept of package delivery by drone. And so I think a lot of interesting things might come out of this. It's also interesting to see how Airbus is involved in this. And, you know, it's clear that, you know, Airbus's future, when they look at it, they don't just consider big airliners, helicopters and other, you know, large aircraft. So it's interesting to see Airbus working in that direction.
So let's talk about more water crossing. In history, again, one of the biggest challenges for any aircraft is crossing the English Channel. So from Blériot back in the day up until a couple weeks ago, when UK commercial drone operator Oculair flew an Enduro quadcopter across the English Channel. It's kind of impressive, huh?
Yeah, especially for the flight duration, since this was a quadcopter, not a fixed wing drone. The flight took 72 minutes. It's 21.7 miles at the point where they made the crossing, which I calculate that to be an 18 mile an hour ground speed. So I don't know how the winds were in those during that flight. The operator stayed on a chase boat within 500 meters of the quadcopter. There's some videos of this. There's a time lapse video in the Gizmag article, and there's also a video making aviation history, the first quadcopter drone to fly across the English Channel, and we'll put those in the show notes at the UAVDigest.com/135, so take a look at those.
And in all fairness, it's the first quadcopter because they have flown drones across the channel, like Predators and Reapers. And
yeah.
So it's kind of a... There's an asterisk after the first crossing. I don't think my little Nano would be able to do it. But 72 minutes is a long time for a quadcopter to fly.
It sure is. I was trying to look for some more information about the battery technology that they used and how they were able to have a flight of such long duration, but I haven't found anything yet, but we'll keep looking. I think we'll probably, you know, hear more about that coming up.
So can I give you some breaking news?
Yes.
Our Twitter feed, and if you don't follow us on Twitter, it's at UAV Digest, just had a picture sent to us from a guy by the name of Jetwine, who's contemplating buying a Parrot Nano mini drone. Wow. And wants to know what we think he should do with it. Well, our second suggestion would be buy it and fly it. I think that's the dronophobe has become one with us, maybe. So
I don't know. This is very curious, David. We'll have to learn more about why Rob has suddenly seen the light. There must be some event that's precipitated his
It's on sale
interest.
For $79.88.
That could be.
I would say Walmart.
That could be. You know, but it is kind of a thing that I've observed that amongst the pilot community, I know many of you listening to this are pilots, and when I say pilots, I mean manned aircraft pilots. But amongst that community, there are some people that, you know, they just don't want to have anything to do with these things and hope to never see one in the air anywhere near them. And then there are other pilots that are intrigued by it and just see it as, you know, an additional form of aviation. And aviation is what they love. And so they, you know, dip their toes into both the manned and the unmanned worlds of flight. So it's kind of an interesting dichotomy, and I am curious to see how Rob made the transition to interest in unmanned.
Well, and one of the things that at least we'll give people credit for is it's a learning experience. You know, I mean, there is a curiosity why they're so popular, why people are so interested in these, and Rob is not anti-drones. He's just not anti-drone flying into his windshield of whatever he's flying at the time. No. We'll give him the benefit of the doubt. But I hope he buys it. I think I'll respond and say buy it and then listen to this episode. and then we could have him on what did you learn by bouncing your micro quad off the walls?
There you go. Well, you know, David, our next story, it's kind of another old dog, new tricks kind of a story.
Anybody who's watched public television and are our ages knows what a David Attenborough special is. You know, gorgeous videos.
Planet Earth.
Planet Earth. I mean, well, he's going to make a new one. And one of his new tools is going to be drones. And you can't blame them. We've seen a lot of great footage from UAVs, high def footage from UAVs in nature photography, whales, dolphins, birds. We've also seen some interesting attacks of whales, dolphins, birds, goats. So this is Sir David Attenborough's Planet Earth 2 series will be featuring UAVs as one of the wildlife.
Yeah, he's going to use, according to the article in the Daily Mail, he's going to be using ultra-high definition and ultra-high-speed cameras on drones, and he's going to be using those to capture some really dramatic footage of animals that are either dangerous to approach or are difficult to approach, difficult to find. So that really suggests some really, really impressive footage to come. It might be interesting to see if it raises the issue of noisy drones bothering wildlife and that sort of an issue. But I'm going to assume that someone like Sir David Attenborough is, attuned to those kinds of things. And I'm sure, no animals were harmed in the making of that series. Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, I thought the same thing you did. You know, we've talked about, excuse the phrase, disruptive technology. Well, I mean, definitely a buzzing quadcopter can be a disruptive technology. And so it'll be interesting to see the balance that they strike between. But, you know, herds of animals galloping like news galloping across Africa or zebras, you know, those helicopter shots that we're all so familiar with now can be done with a quadcopter. And can't wait. I love Attenborough. I love that kind of planet Earth. And so it's
spectacular stuff. Can't wait for it to come out.
Yeah, it's worth watching.
All right, next item. This is almost an update on a story we talked about back in episode 117. We mentioned back then that the FAA had entered into what they call a Pathfinder agreement with CACI International in order to evaluate how CACI's sensor technology could help detect UAS in the vicinity of airports. And, of course, this is a very large issue because of the number of incursions of, I guess we now call rogue drones, into the airspace in and around airports. Well, now the update is from GPS World that CACI has a proof of concept system that they've actually tested at the Atlantic City International Airport.
And why Atlantic City International Airport? Because the FAA test center is located adjoining the Atlantic City International Airport. So it's kind of cool. Their SkyTracker UAS, and SkyTracker is trademarked, is a, quote, precision system to protect high-value assets and support public safety against escalating threat posed by inadvertent or unlawful misuse of UAS. SkyTracker uses radio frequency sensors positioned around an airport which detect frequencies typically used by unmanned aircraft. Interesting that we're working on bandwidth, and frequencies of radio-controlled airplanes and UAVs. You know, we haven't really had the FCC say these frequencies are for UAVs, but evidently there's a narrow enough band that would trigger the alarm.
And the way this works is that the sensors detect those frequencies, and then they triangulate the signals that they've received and can locate not only where is the UAV, but also where is the operator. And they've been conducting these tests. They say that they've done 141 of them. They've conducted those tests with both UAVs on the ground and in flight, and apparently the system seems to work pretty well.
Interesting system, you know, and we'll see if it goes into use. My problem is this: you set it up and you have an incursion. We'll call it an incursion, and the UA the system gets picked up. So then, what happens is, I mean, Do you shut down the airport, then run out there with police car? There's the whole, okay.
Now that you've found it, what do you do? Right.
Yeah, it's so that's, we're still a long way along. I mean, now our other options after this, now that you've discovered it, is do you launch a bald eagle after it, or do you fire off a giant net, or do you use another quadcopter to drag it to the ground? I mean, we've got all of these anti-drone, and then there's, of course, there's the old-fashioned American shotgun. So it,
all of those seem to be pretty effective, but yeah, so, but it's a good,
but not pretty effective around an airport.
Right. Yes. Yes. That's a good point. Good point.
So, I mean, I don't really want a large bird flying around an airport, even if it is attacking drones. It could do quite enough damage to an airplane.
Well,
so
the thing I like about this one, maybe, David, now that you've got me thinking that way, is that because this identifies the location of the operator, I mean, that's something that you can take some action on and go after the guy. So that seems to be a kind of a good angle to this. It's more than just where's the drone. Let's get the drone. I mean, obviously you want to get it out of the way, but being able to locate the operator seems like that's a good solution to this.
Well, I agree. Let's see. Our next story is AT&T and Intel to test drones on an LTE network. LTE, of course, is cell phone technology. And they're working to understand how drones could be connected via ground-based network.
This is really kind of interesting to me anyway, David. They're looking at communication between drones, to and from drones. If you could speak to drones and if you could communicate with drones the same way we do with computers, where you know all you need is an IP address, that really opens up a lot of really, really interesting implications. If you can connect to the network of drones, if drones in flight can connect to each other into other important or significant items on the network, then you know all kinds of safety, security, flying beyond line of sight, even you know a sense and avoid interaction with manned aircraft. All of these things become a really different kind of a problem that has some interesting solutions. In other words, if each drone in flight is an independent event, I mean, that's, you can control it, but there's a lot of difficulties. But if everything is connected, here we go with the Internet of Things, you know, the problem becomes kind of a lot more interesting, I think.
And if you want to fly packages, you're going to have to sort of get to that point with the technology that, you know, they're all got to interact. Waypoints, you know, if you're delivering a package from X to Z, you still need waypoints. And so, and that waypoint handoff, so you can deliver the package beyond line of sight autonomously, it's an interesting way of looking at it, that, you know, you take off from the hub, you move out and you go to point A, and then point A, from point A to point B, but there's got to be that handoff. So we'll see if AT&T comes together. I get really worried, though, when they talk about the Internet of Things. I'm not that acutely paranoid about technology, but you hear things about people spying on you from your refrigerator, and I just get sort of creeped out by those kind of stories about the Internet of Things.
Interesting that you bring that up, David, because, well, first of all, the Internet of Things is, you know, in AT&T's sights. When you look at the two teams from AT&T that are going to be working with Intel on this, one is the AT&T Internet of Things team, and the other is the AT&T Foundry Innovation Center. So, I mean, these are some pretty smart folks that I'm sure will create some really interesting things. But again, and as I've said in the past, maybe too many times, the security of these kinds of things, the degree to which the network, the degree to which the communications between these, you know, different nodes on the network is secure is a real issue, because typically when you're trying to create something new that doesn't exist, as they're trying to do here, the focus is on how do you get the darn thing to work, not so much how do you protect it from people that want to break it. And so I just hope that the, you know, parties involved here are looking at the long term and building in the security from the beginning. Otherwise, this could become a big issue in the future. But nevertheless, I think that this is a significant research project that I think has or could have extremely widespread implications. So I think we're very interested in following this one.
It's all that technology we don't know exists surrounding this stuff that suddenly exists because of it. So it's, we're back into little computers again.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the meme that showed up over the last couple of weeks that shows a picture of an iPhone with the calculator function up, and it says, your fifth grade teacher said, you're not always going to have a calculator with you at all times. And the bottom of the meme says, well, about that. So we don't know what we don't know. Well, our friend Ian Kershaw sent this to Airplane Geeks, and we sort of swiped it for this week.
We took it as our video of the week.
And it's a TED Talk from this month, February 2016, at TED 2016. And it's Meet the Dazzling Flying Machines of the Future by Raffaello D'Andrea.
Right. This is one of those fascinating videos where they demonstrate some interesting capabilities for small drones. And some of this is just, you know, mesmerizing to me anyway in terms of what they can do. I particularly liked the demonstration, the swarming demonstration. Now, swarming is a concept that's just fascinating to me, because I don't know how it works. I don't know how it could work, but it does. And
so if anybody does, feel free to contact us, because we'd love to talk to you about it, because it definitely is a unique aspect of UAVs.
Yeah. And this demonstration is pretty impressive too, because what they do is they have lights on some very small little quadcopters in the auditorium. They darken the room. The lights on the drones fly around, change colors. They swarm into assembling different sort of groupings of these little lights that all move around in a dynamic way. And it's just very fascinating. The mathematics behind it must be really, really kind of impressive. So we'll put a link to that video in the show notes. See that at the UAVDigest.com/135. And thanks, Ian, for sending that along.
Do we know if Ian listens to this show?
Well, maybe he will now when we tell him that he's the video of the week.
Yeah, well, we'll have to reach. Ian is one of our good friends on Airplane Geeks and a really good listener. So, well, I guess we're running along and I got to go bake brownies. So,
we want to thank you all for listening. This has been episode 135 of the UAV Digest. As always, you can find us on our website at theuavdigest.com. You can listen to the podcast there if you like. What we really encourage you to do is subscribe to the podcast, so that way you won't miss an episode and they're delivered automatically to you. If you want to see the show notes for this episode, they have links to all the stories we talked about, the videos, and so forth, you can go straight to the show notes at theuavdigest.com/135.
And of course, how can you help the show, you ask? Well, there's multiple ways you can do it. You can follow us on Twitter, so you can follow us on and see what Jet winds up to on his new purchase. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/theuavdigest. And you can always send us listener mail or feedback, and that's feedback@theuavdigest.com. Send us your stories, your links. We love it. The show is easily done for us when you guys participate and send us stuff. And, of course, leave a review on iTunes, or if you stream us live with your phone on Stitcher. And last but not least, you can purchase some swag at cafepress.com or become a patron of the show at patreon.com. And both of those are, have links to our show notes. And I'd like to say thank you to Go Engineer for renewing our sponsorship and our relationship with them. Thank you very much from Max and I. It gives us the ability to keep the show going. So I guess I'll end on that and say this is David in Philly.
And Max in Hartford.
Thanks for listening.